I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
This summer, click into cordless power with Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. And keep your flower beds looking fresh with the 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Then clear leaves and debris with the 40-volt leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at the Home Depot and on homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
The Black Fat Femme Podcast is a production of iHeartRadio and Dr. John Paul, LLC. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Fat Femme Podcast, where all the intersections of identity are celebrated. I'm one of your hosts, John, also known as Dr. John Paul. And while y'all are trying to figure out how you're going to pay your taxes that you owe this year, you can thank Paul, Ryan, and Trump for that. I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to get me a sponsor for my crusade to the moon, honey, because Earth is ghetto and I still want to leave. How are you, Joho?
Honestly, take me somewhere different. Let's go to Neptune. Let's go to Uranus. Like, the moon's going to be capitalized soon. Elon Musk doing a little space hotel thing. Let's just switch it up. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I'm over the moon. The moon has nothing else.
Hell in Mars?
I don't know where in the intergalactic highway it's going to be. I just know that it's, you know, the picture that it shows just shows a space station essentially just floating around. So I'm a hope there's some, you know, Autobahn that will take people from Earth to the moon, to the Mars. Who's to say? But that's neither here nor there, fam.
For those who are watching, Jordan, you'll see me dancing because I'm thinking about Captain EO. We are here to save the world. Change the world. Have you ever seen Captain EO?
Never in my life. But when you were doing this, it made me think of the girls from White Chicks who was doing that.
No, I'm doing the Captain EO dance. Chase, hey, you have to. I'm gonna send that to you. You have to watch it. But please, go
watch it. I'll watch it. Sorry, fam. It is Jordan or Joho, or emphasis on the ho part today. Now I just want to say Happy Black History Month, y'all. We are Blackly Black 24/7, but this month we're gonna be blickly black all month long. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris can cut in. I'm black, y'all. I'm black, y'all. I'm blackity black.
Bitch, black, I'm black. Black.
Yeah, that part too. Yes, we are definitely in Black History Month. I'm excited because this is the first. So last year, I don't think we zoomed in as much as we did with Black History Month. And a lot of our topics this month specifically are going to be very, very black. So I'm just really excited that this year we're actually being that super intentional on Black History Month. And so we're going to be talking a lot about Black History Month. And I guess this is a great segue because, as we always do, we give Miss Tisha Campbell her flowers. We are going to jump over into Still Here. So what's on your mind, Joho?
John, thank you so much. So for this week, Still Here, since we are in Black History Month, I want to ask you, what is your favorite Black History moment.
Ooh. Yes, yes, my favorite Black History moment. So y'all know I, you know, when it's time for me to be educational, you know, I show up when it's time for me to really get serious and I'm like, oh, we have a plight and we need to fight and we need to do X, Y, and Z. Y'all know I jump into my educational bag. But when I saw this question in the show flow, I said, this is the perfect time for me to be petty and be messy. Now, so for those of you, I'm going to take it on back. Let's go back to August of 2023. I honestly love when Black people come together on the internet to make fun of racism. And okay. I believe that while this is not in the history books yet, because it will be, but while it is not in the history books yet, I believe that August of 2023 will go down in infamy as being one of the best days for Black people and for Black history. Now, what I am talking about, for those of you who may not listen to the show or may be new to the show, we are going to talk a little bit about what they call the Alabama Montgomery Riverfront Brawl. Yes. What a time, what a moment. It was a hot day down in Alabama. This is where white people got a little too fresh and they had to learn the hard way. And I'll say this, because I think people come over here and they're like, oh, they messy and they always talking about Black people. I want to say that I do not condone violence. However, I am a true believer that if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready.
Okay.
Those white people ran up on those Black people and thought that the 4 years that they had behind them was going to protect them in that moment. And baby, when I tell you that those Black people were ready, they were ready. They pulled up that boat, not a car, not a train. It was a boat. They pulled up to the side of that docking station. And baby, when I tell you that Black baby swam across that water like an Olympic swimmer to help them Black people when that boat docked.
From all angles. Yes, every they came from the sea, the river, the boat.
Angle. Lift every trail. Voice and swing, honey. They went off. And not I was here point. For every single minute of it. But before I give it back to you, what I will say is that the star of said brawl was when that baby picked up that white chair. The white chair was the moment. She was that girl. And I shouldn't be laughing at this, but baby, when he whacked that lady into that water and then he bashed that man over his head with that white chair, you couldn't tell me nothing. I was on the floor. It literally lived in my mind as one of the best moments that I have ever lived to see. It was beautiful.
You know, the white chair really did what needed to be done. The white chair, you could argue, is the Stonewall brick of today. You know, like the white chair really served a purpose.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
No one, you know, and so this time, you know, we know who picked up the white chair and who swung the white chair.
Yes.
And so we get to give him grace and him his props for the rest of our lives. But
amen.
Actually the chair, you know, I think about whoever the creator who had done the interview with the white chair, shit has sent me still today. Yes. Just has me tickle pink.
Yes.
Who I live. The art pieces that come from the chair truly are iconic. I mean, we have watercolor, we have interviews, we have interpretive dance pieces.
You do.
We have, you know, we have public sculptures, public arts, you name it. Like, it is simply the best. So I thank you so much, Reverend Dr. John Paul, for bringing us the chair, today.
Yes.
Ooh, my favorite Black History moment. There are just so many, honestly. I think this week I'm also tickled pink by the resurgence of that video of Rosa, Harry, and Shirley rapping about their accomplishments.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know who posted it.
Yes.
But they, you know, they asked who went harder. And I mean, TBH, my girl Harriet, she went hard.
She did.
She pulled up the blippy. Okay. At least she said they got the blippy with me. Okay. Say less. That was it for me. It was a wrap. I think another moment of Black History for me is is, I think about this way too often, is RuPaul on The Weakest Link, which was that little game show, and being asked a question where the obvious answer is horoscope. And I know RuPaul knows this answer. And RuPaul paused, held the question in her Chaka head, Khan. And with full gusto said, Chaka Khan. And speaking of Chaka Khan, what Liz in my head for is Whitney saying Chaka Khan.
Yes.
And I'm every woman. Uh-huh. It gets me every time. It just, yes. Like, it just, when the outro happens, she's like, huh, Chaka Khan. Yes. Chaka Khan. Every yes. So Black history really is made every day in these hair parts. And I just live. I'm thankful to see
it. Oh, yes. But can we also talk about, I was going to also say, we have to mention this too. Another moment we cannot forget is when, what is her name? She was on, you know, I'm terrible with names. I can see her face, but I can't say it. She was playing her aunt. What's Whitney Houston's aunt? We know her aunt's name. Warwick, Dionne Warwick. When that
Dionne Warwick, comedian
was playing Dionne Warwick. Y'all, if y'all follow me on social, y'all know that I've been posting it all the time. She said, because why would Xi Jinping want to flood my basement and rust my basement?
Oh, Maya Rudolph. Yeah, Maya Rudolph doing it. I'm screaming.
When she said, what is it? How does she close it? She said something. Oh my gosh.
Oh God. I literally just watched it an hour ago.
Oh my goodness. I'm after
it. She said it. She said it and then she repeated it in song.
Yes. Russ Mabo Flex. Oh. But again, Maya Rudolph is just. Here it is. What's she saying?
Speaking of Dionne Warwick, wherever did Dionne Warwick?
To what end? To what end? To what end? Yes. Because why would Xi Jinping want to flood my basement and rust my Bowflex? To what end? Yes. To what end? That is it. To what end? Oh, my God. What a moment. Black history is just, it's just everything. But anyway, all that to be said, this made me feel so good. We have to take a break and pay some bills before Xi Jinping floods our basement and rusts our Bowflex. But when we come back, we are going to chat about something that has been on my mind for quite a quick second. So we'll be back in a sec.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Fam, we are back. recovery time between segments is not always the longest, so sorry if you catch me still cackling a bit, especially for a very serious conversation we're about to have today. But we're going to jump into our family bag once again to a little auntie and uncle situation conversation. So a story came out with USA Today, I believe just a few days ago, noting that by the time you hear this, will be last week, noting that aunts and other mothers, and they and other mothers is used as one word, often support LGBTQ plus youth more than general family members, citing a study that was published in December 2023 that focused on the impact of aunts, tias, other mothers on LGBTQ plus youth. It's kind of groundbreaking because they name that most studies focus on the nuclear family vertical, as in parents and, and children. Some studies spread to siblings, which I think is interesting as well, too. But this is one of the few, if not the only ones, that hones in on members outside of this vertical.
Yeah.
Whether they're biological aunts or fictive ones, or ones like a play aunt, or essentially. We'll link in the show notes the article as well and the study. But for today's topic, I want to begin by asking your thoughts about the ways your aunts may have or may not have shown up for you in growing up.
I love it. So yes, I will say this before we kind of dig into this. I love that this study is being done because I have always kind of felt a way of like, even just like being out and about and seeing like, or even just with the org I work with, right? So I have gone to events and have assumed, you know, just assumed that kids that have been there were there with their parents, right? Their mothers or with their fathers, whatever. And sometimes, most times, a lot of queer kids are there with their aunts. They'll say, oh, that's my aunt, or that's my tia, or that's my, you know, my friend's mom who took me in, right? And I'm like, wow, there's actually a study that they're talking about the importance of people who have shown up for these queer kids, especially at a time where they need it most. And so it really took me to my own place where I was thinking about the aunts who had shown up for me. And so specifically wanting to like lift the name of my Auntie Anne, who's on my dad's side. I made a joke in our chat that my Auntie Anne was the one who let us drink. Like she was always the aunt that was like, I don't care what y'all do out there. Y'all not going to be drinking outside. Y'all going to be drinking in here. I want to be able to know, you know, I don't care if you drink, just as long as you do it here. So my Auntie Anne was always that one who, you know, was very funny and cracked jokes and was real protective of like, let John just be who John is. Y'all ain't got to critique John all the time. Like Anne would always jump in and save me, you know, whenever my uncles, and we're going to talk about uncles too, but when my uncles would try to, you know, basically chastise me, my Auntie Anne would jump in to save me. And then I wanted to shout out my Auntie Yolanda and my Auntie Kim. So I actually have two Auntie Kims, but my Auntie Yolanda is on my mom's side, who's actually my mom's second cousin. But because she's older, she was my aunt. And we, you know, we do that in Black families, right? If there's like a certain age cutoff that if they're like over 35, you know, when you're a kid, that means that they're an aunt, not uncle.
Like, auntie,
even if they are your third or fourth cousin. And so shout out to my Auntie Yolanda, who I think was really in a lot of ways, you know, and my Auntie Kim's. And I say this because I have two Auntie Kim's. One had an addiction problem. And I say that transparently, not to shame her, but to say, you know, that even with all of the stuff that she was going through in her own life, she still made it a point to protect me. And that's the thing that always stuck with me about my Auntie Kim and my Auntie Yolanda, who both had drug addiction problems. They were just really beautiful Black women who saw the spark in me and really wanted to protect that. And I made a note. I said, you know, I have, and I've talked about this in so many different veins, I have a lot of beef with my uncles, and I'm talking Netflix beef, honey. Give me all the Oscars and the Emmys and the Golden Globes because I got beef with my uncles. But my Auntie Yolanda, my Auntie Kim, my, you know, both of my Auntie Kims and my Auntie Anne, like they literally were the ones who really took care of me. So I really just wanted to shout them out, name them, that they really made me feel like, in moments when I was like, why am I here? Why the world doesn't like me? My uncles don't like me. My cousins don't like me. They were the ones who stepped in for my mom and said, we got you. We see you. We're going to make sure you're good. You know?
That's actually a really interesting conversation piece to like why so many issues with uncles and not as many with aunts. And I mean, I'm also thinking of the idea of like the cousins being aunts too, because I think there is like a framing of aunts and uncles are the adults in your life and the cousins are like the ones that are your peers essentially. Right. Now I was thinking about this, particularly the uncles part as I was reading the study, because I do wonder if there'll be research done for these populations. I mean, like my uncles would have never been a conversation piece with them. Like not even my play uncle who's my mom's friend who is also gay. Like he did not serve as a place of shelter for me as a kid. Like I knew I was loved by him, but when I know that when I had come out, my mom had talked to him about it. He encouraged that maybe it's a phase, you know? Obviously as an adult now, he's more open with me now, and that's really great. But it's a moment where I think like, damn, like as my mom's bestie, you could have said this or done this, right? Or my dad's brother is like, they're all just so hyper masculine. Like, even the uncle I had who was gay himself, he passed away when I was really young from age-related causes. Mm-hmm. But that said, my dad's really framework of like another gay man was just like hyper mass dude who was in the military. Mm-hmm, so there was never been discussion about being gay or queer, especially not through a lens of being femme. So I just cannot envision it for my uncles at all, which is sad. But what I appreciate about the study was that the study shared so much of these notions of expanded family that are rooted in being BIPOC, low income, or immigrant culture, or like immigrant family cultures. Like,
yeah.
I grew up like, in an interesting way, like despite my mom, you know, being Jewish and like and seen as white, but also like being a first generation, I grew up with all my mom's friends being aunties to me. Like I really thought she had five sisters. I was like, damn, Deborah, you got hella sisters, girl. Like you got hella moms in these streets. you hella sisters. I realized that they're all just besties.
Yeah.
Whereas my dad actually had all sisters, but I wasn't as close to them. Only like a few of them. And I know that they loved me because they always told me and show me that. And I think, you know, part of it, I'm sure, is also like my dad's unwillingness to bring me around them more. And I wish I could ask him why, Negro, why? I have to consult with him and the urn I have of him to ask and find it out. But that's something that I did not really get to have.
Yeah.
And you know, but I also think like in that side of the family, like on the Black side, I feel like in many Black families, you don't talk about sexuality in many ways, but like historical or like traditional Black families, you don't talk about sexuality so much. And so I honestly, like today, don't know what they think about my queerness. And I can't just say I felt or that I feel protected. I mean, I think I'm also at a place now where as an adult, I really don't care what they think about it. Like my brother and I talk about this a lot, or my siblings and I talk about this a lot. Like if they were to not be like embracing of it, we wouldn't really care. Right. And I think, you know, I think there are moments in which like we reach out to each other and they show that they are caring of who I am as a person. Like I have one aunt who messages me or texts me how much she loves me, and I think, and I'm sure she sees me being my like biggest, fattest, blackest, most Jewish gay self, so I'm sure she loves it anyways. Though I will say, I remember meeting one of my aunts in my dad's service who I had not met. I only heard stories of her my whole life. I never actually met her, even though she lived like 2 hours away from us. I finally met her at my dad's service, and I was like, her name was Marianne, and I was like, Auntie Marianne, nice to finally meet you. I've been wanting to meet you for so long. She was like, oh, you're Jim's son. And I was like, yeah. And she was like, child, you got some sugar in your tank, don't you? And I was like, she cracked you. She gave me a read.
Not her clocking you. Yeah.
She read me down. Yeah. Mind you, I didn't have nails at that point yet. So I was like, how she just say it? But like,
yeah,
I knew.
Yeah.
I was like, for my first, I was like, sugar in my, she just called me a gay. And you know, and like, and, yeah. And it was a point where, like, I knew, but she laughed. We both cackled. So I knew it was something that, like, she wasn't against. But I haven't talked to her since that moment in time, and she's never said anything else to me, either. So I think, you know, I think it's an interesting thing because I think, in contrast to you, I have never really felt protected by my aunts or my play aunts in that way. I felt more safe with my brother and my sister. And my sister especially, because I think my sister gives big auntie energy. Always. Like, I know when I have kids, she will absolutely be auntie to them.
Very much
like,
auntie.
She is. Her daughters will be aunties to my kids. Also, can we discuss the difference between auntie and auntie? Because to me, this is code switching in real time for me, being a mixed kid, because I grew up calling my mom's sister and my mom's friends aunties and my dad's sister's aunties. And the way I had to be traversing language, like aunties versus aunties. And I know people be like, oh, like if you like if you say aunties, you in white culture. If you say aunties, you in black culture. And I'm like, well, the culture thing was intense because like, even today, if I go see my mom's sister, I will call her auntie off instinct. And if I was going to say auntie, it feels weird to call her auntie and not auntie. But if I go to my dad's siblings, like, you know, like, or if I talk about them, I always say auntie so-and-so. Like, I can't say auntie. Auntie feels weird to me on that part. So just, you know, if anyone listening has that experience, holler at your boy, because sometimes I'd be struggling like, oh, that's an interesting thing. And then throw in like, because for me growing up, I had a lot of Filipino friends who had aunties. So you have aunties and aunties. And so I have a lot of Filipino friends also be some of the aunties or the titas. So it's just, language is wild. As I said, I'm like, wow, a lot of different ways.
Right. But what you are speaking to is very cultural. And I think, you know, even just as you were talking about, and again, I could be totally out in left field by saying this, but thinking auntie versus auntie. So if someone says that's your auntie Tanya, you know, right. So I have an auntie Tanya, but that's your auntie Tanya, you know, Tanya, that for me, auntie kind of just feels like, okay, that's somebody that we're related to, but an auntie is someone you're closer to, right? And again, I could be totally wrong, but it feels that way for me that when I, and like I said, I have aunts who are very much cousins of my mom that I refer to as like, so for instance, even my second auntie Kim, like my auntie Kim and my auntie Judy, those are my mom's cousins, but because of the way that they treated us growing up and because of the relationship that I had, it was, you respect them and even now, right? Like they'll ask about me. And I also want to shout out like even too, like I know, so I don't know if my auntie Robin listens to the show. If she does, hey, auntie Robin. But like my dad's sister, right? Like my auntie Robin was always one of those aunts who I think from a very young age just kind of always just let me be and was the aunt that I aspired to, right? Like when she pulled up in her BMW, I was like, okay, that's the aunt that I want to be like when I get older, who, you know, she had her own daughters and she had a life, but we always knew that Auntie Robin had a good job and we knew Auntie Robin had her own condo and Auntie Robin, you know, kind of, she basically just, she ran her
own way. Auntie Robin, yeah.
Like Auntie Robin had that energy, right? And so like,
she have her own car. She got her own thing.
Right.
She got her own. Beep, okay. Beep,
you know who got the
keys? I-N-D-E-P-E-N-D-E-N-T. Do you know what that means? Okay. And so
I think it was, you know, I think in a lot of ways, our aunts, the aunts that we were close to, whether they be, you know, dad sisters, mom sisters, and stuff, and even kind of back to this article, I think they speak a lot to safety. I think they really speak to the idea of people that you know, like when your mom is not around, you know, because that was, I'll say that, and I think this is the biggest thing, like I don't want to make it seem like I got abused growing up, because I didn't. I will say that I came up with traditional Gen X and even I would say boomer like parents, because my mom was born right on the cusp of the boomer era going out. And so my mom still has a lot, even though my mom is still considered Gen X, my mom has a very strong boomer mindset of everybody in the family could whoop you, right? It wasn't just a, you know, you could get a whooping from anybody.
My dad was the same way. Remember he took me, he said, you have permission to spank him. I'm like, bro, you just met him today.
I don't even know this nigga, right? But I think there was an, it took to a point, and I bring that up because I say that I was grateful for my Auntie Robin and my Auntie Yolanda's and my Auntie Kim's and all of them, because when I didn't perform the way that my uncles wanted me to perform, they would step in and say, yo, leave John alone or leave them kids alone. And that was their favorite way of basically saying, like, I know you're out here being hard on these kids, man, let them kids just be, right? And so I think that that's the thing of why aunts play such a pivotal role in queer kids' lives is because, and I think when you really get to it, right, hyper-masculinity, it really is. And I mean, we've talked about this in so many different facets in the 80 episodes that we've had. Shout out to our 80 episodes.
Okay. Come on, Flex.
Episodes, we talked about hyper masculinity in so many different ways. And I think that for me is why I felt like in the conversation of us, like we've talked about family, we've never really zoned in on the importance of like the aunts or the cousins who step up as aunts or even the queer uncles who show up as our aunts, right? Like we don't talk enough about the safety, the ways that they've protected us and kept us from those beatings. Or, you know, I think if, you know, I always think about a specific moment where I know my dad and my Uncle Sean, you know, they I could see and I still see the look in their eyes to this day, where my father and my Uncle Sean were ready to basically rough me up because I wasn't performing the way that they wanted to. And when they heard me screaming at them in the background, my Auntie Ann was the one who ran in and grabbed me and said, go outside, right? Like it was her who literally kept me from the age of 12, 13 from getting my ass kicked by, you know, my birth father and my uncle and his brother. So like, I, as much as I don't talk to my Auntie Ann or my Auntie Robin or even my Auntie, you know, my Auntie Kim or my Auntie Yolanda's, I'm so grateful for them, because I don't know if they know how much they protected me in moments where I knew I was about to get my ass kicked, you know. And it's just, you know, I'm grateful for these studies, because there are a lot of aunties and uncles, and I say uncles in the sense of aunties, right? The queer ones, who are making sure that we're not homeless, who are making sure we have food, who are making sure we're not getting beat, who are making sure that we have the love and the nurture that we need in order to be able to do stuff like this, right? Like to be able to be on a show like this. So that's just something that lives in my mind as we have this conversation.
You know, as you were talking about like your mom and being like the instances in which like your mom wasn't home or your mom took you somewhere, like I think about that a lot too, of like, and it's weird because I often try to not think in a binary lens, right? But what I will say is like my mom's discernment of who can care for me different than my dad's discernment. Like my dad would just take me anywhere.
Yeah,
people like he don't even know like that. Like I mean, my dad would take me. My dad would legit take me to hit like to his dealer's house and hit, like and have them watch me while my dad would do shit. You know, yeah, whereas like my mom, I imagine with your mom too, like. Even when she wasn't home or couldn't be there physically, right? She took you places that she felt safe enough for you to be at in the first place. And that to me is like, those are often going to be your aunties, right? Like they won't necessarily be like, even though it's your aunt and uncle's house, she's leaving you with your auntie, not just with your uncle. Your uncle is there and steps in, you know, but then your auntie comes out and snatches you up. And I think that's like a testament, one, to womanhood. Period, which is something I'm just like thinking about now out loud as you were saying that, because I'm like, oh, my mom would have never put me somewhere where she didn't trust who was going to take care of me and watch me, and that when she comes back, like I come back in one piece, you know, versus the male figure in my life who would have taken me anywhere, you know, and. and would be like, if he acts up, whip him, and I'm like.
I don't know you. Yeah.
This man got katanas in his house. He gonna chop me up into pieces. Right. And so I I'm just thinking about that and holding that. And I think it's really special. I think especially because like right now I'm in the midst of reading. I'm like halfway through reading an anthology of Audre Lorde's essays and poems. And there's one I believe it's in I Am Your Sister, not Sister Outsider, but I Am Your Sister, that talks about the idea of like of womanhood, particularly through a lens of like black feminist thought. Mm-hmm. But also she mentions about like being a black lesbian and the idea of people would discount her for being a black lesbian. Right. But all things that she's done and all people that she's nurtured have been through the lens of her being a black lesbian, how black lesbians or black queer women really show up for each other in every way, because they know that they can't depend on like cis folks, cishet folks, and men to do the same thing. So I just, I'm like thinking about that as a whole. And I'll say, okay, we talked about our experiences with the aunties and you hinted towards this a little bit, but how about our experiences being the aunties? Like, I want to give Auntie Energy as well. I want to be Auntie Robin as well, which is interesting because I don't want to give Uncle Energy. Like, I just don't. I like uncles to me. Uncles sound lazy. Uncles sound uninvolved. And I'm sure there's something for me to explore and reshift my relationship to Uncle, like why I think it sounds so bad. I mean, I know I'm gunkle to some folks, gay uncle, and I think That's cute and I love it, but I would much rather be auntie. Like I want to give auntie energy. I want to give independence. I want to give, like, she got her own car and got her own things. I want to come in with a bougie ass fur coat. So like what is your experience at present being auntie? How do you want to level up in your auntie game?
Yeah.
What does it look like for you?
Yeah. So I will say that when you ask the question of like, how do I want to level up in my auntie, kind of my auntiness per se, you know, I do see my nephew seeing me as kind of uncles, you know, the Uncle Jonathan / you know, Gunkle / you know, all of those things. But I think for me, like I said, I remember there's a specific, if you go through my social media, there's a specific picture of me holding my nephew or my nibbling. I've been trying to say nibbling more because, again, you know, while I know it's probably going to end up being cis, very cis. My nephew, I could just tell, he's very much like my brother.
Not a cis, but very cis.
Yeah, not a cis, but very cis. just very strong male energy there. I will say that I remember holding my my nephew, and I remember kind of posting under it, I want to protect him in the ways that I wasn't protected by my uncles, right? And so I don't necessarily have a thing of like how I want to show up per se for my nephew, because really my brother's son is the only one that I have like strong interactions with, where I see them all the time. We make plans, we do stuff. But I think the biggest thing, like I said, it really comes back to safety for me. I really want my nephew feeling safe and protected, and knowing that no matter what he decides to do, right, whether it be play with dolls or whether it play, you know, whether, and I even think about like, so shout out, because I know my friend Falon listens to the show. My friend Falon has three kids, and you know, she'll oftentimes reach out to me and tell me what her kids are doing, specifically one of her kids who's very, very gender neutral in a lot of the things he does. You know, and I hate for this to be such a gendered kind of conversation around it when I'm talking about like non-binary, non-gendered things. So it's just it's very interesting, because I try not to label children, but at the same time I'm also like, they're showing up in a certain way. All that to be said, though, like I love people and I love friends, I love family who see me as a beacon of safety for their kids, the safety that their kids never had, or the safety that they didn't have. Because I have a lot of friends who've also shared with me that they too were abused, both mentally, physically, all these different things. And so I always want kids. I think that's my number one thing, and why I think kids, oftentimes my husband says this to me too, he'll say, why is it that people who have children, their children always flock to you? And I've had moments where I've been in like Target, or I've been in a store. I'll never forget it. And I'm sharing this on the mic, and it may be related, but it's not. I don't know. But I do remember there was this one moment when I was like in a Target, and I had walked past this woman who had a baby in the basket, and the baby looked at me and started like putting its hands out to come to me. And the lady looked back at the baby and was like, that's really weird. And I just was like, well, okay. I was like, it's not a big deal. It happens all the time. And the lady said, no, it's weird, because my kid doesn't go to anybody. Like, she was like, my kid literally fights to go to anybody. And so obviously that baby either saw me or one of the spirits on my shoulder or what, but they saw something in me that made them feel safe. And I said, that's the thing I always want for kids. Like, I want children, whether they be queer, trans, not whatever, however they identify, I want these kids to be safer than what I ever have. But I also will say, in terms of like my auntiness, like I also want other people to see me as an opportunity of, if they can do it, so can I. You know, I know that we talk a lot about capitalism, and we talk a lot about how awful capitalism can be, but it's really, really cool. You know, I've had moments where I've seen young queer folks look at me and be like, I like your car, or oh girl, I love your bag, or oh I love your nails, or and it's just an opportunity. Like, in that interaction, right, as much as you may only see it from the monetary or from the materialistic standpoint, for me, I will take it in, and I hear it as something being further than that. It's the idea of, you know, you are a prospect for me, like you're a possibility model for me. And so I think about that a lot, right? The kids who look at me and smile when they see me holding my partner's hand, or the kids that look at me and they see my bag and they know it's Louis Vuitton, and they go, ooh, I love your bag. And it's the undertone is, I can't wait to the day where I can be as successful, or I can do the things I want to do in order to be successful in my eyes, right? That's just my long way of saying, like, yeah, I really want to be the uncle, auntie, gunkle, whatever, that people see as a possibility model and also see safety in. So what about you, love?
I mean, one thing I'm hearing from you is like, it's not that you're materialistic. It's just you're just a material. Like, just a material.
I am the material girl.
And you got you got yourself the Chanel Nye boots, whatever they are called.
Metaphorically,
not the actual Chanel Nye boots, but the metaphor. But I identify so much with what you're saying about the children, the kids being drawn to you, because I too feel like I love kids. I want kids, but right now I love kids because I don't have them. Like, I love kids because they're not my kids, and I love kids because I don't have to keep them. Hey. But I love kids, and people like, and I say I hate kids because I'm like, ugh, kids. But like, you give me a baby, I'm like, oh my god, a baby. And I feel like, and I'm really, I think I'm just innately good with babies and kids. Like, a lot of friends just like, little people be like, my friends are like, oh, my baby. And I'm like, oh, hi, baby. And I, you know, like, I don't know if it's because I got titties for them, but like, they just, the baby just love me. And so I feel, but like, and I feel this, I too often think, oh, do they just see this like divine feminine energy in me that makes them feel safe in that moment, like as a child, because babies, like, people think babies don't really know what they're doing. In some ways they don't, but like, if a baby doesn't feel safe, they will cry and scream. And so many babies I'm around feel safe around me. It makes me think a lot about what I too want to be a place of safety for folks. It makes me think a lot about also like having nibblings who are the same age as you, too, like, you know, the nibblings closest with, we are all around the same age. And so when we're all together with my brother and sister, like, it's like the moments in which they call me uncle versus the moments in which we act as if we're siblings and stuff, right? I particularly remember like this moment where we were like we were out somewhere and someone was like talking to one of my nieces in some ways. I mean, she was also bad mouthing the person. So I was like, you gotta stop. Right. But when the person said something, me and my brother had got up like, okay, like, you trying to say something else about us? And my niece was like, okay, unks, I see you, unks, right? Yeah. Which is like, typically they would never call me unk, at least because my brother's older than me, so they'll call him unk. But typically, like, I'm like sis to them, essentially. And so sis people just be like, do you know sis? No, sis, S-I-S. Yeah. And so it's, you know, it's an interesting thing of like the moments in which we like shift ourselves and be, you know, like onto your uncle. But I think of the friends of mine who have kids now and how they want me uncle or Theo, you know, Jordan, Jojo, Joho. But now I'm like, call me auntie, because I'm trying to give auntie energy. Right. I mean, yes. I can reshift perspective of what uncle means to them. But I also want to be auntie energy because that's where I feel. So I have felt, even though I haven't felt safe in a lot of my aunties, like, I will say to my auntie, my mom's sister, I feel really safe with her, and I want to have that too. So I appreciate naming that of, I want to be auntie, have auntie energy, because I want to be safe. I want the child, you know, that's around me to know that they can be their full selves. They ask me anything they want to ask me, that they can see me live audaciously out however I am and whoever I am in that moment, and that they feel an inherent permission to be that as well too, and also know that whoever they become, that I will always be their fierce advocate and biggest cheerleader besides their parents, hopefully. In that process. So I definitely want to be, I want to carry auntie energy, whether that comes off when someone says I'm auntie or uncle, whatever.
Right.
But I too want a source of shelter, safety, peace, and like and also fun. Like, I want to be the one where if the kid's like, I want to try alcohol for the first time, I'm like, okay, like let's go. Let me text your parents and be like, hey, so I'm not giving them a sip of tequila. Is that okay? Like, be like, I'm not trying to get arrested, but like I want you to feel safe to do that with me, and I want to be the person that does as well. So yeah, I hear you, I see you, and that's what I want to carry with me as well too. Whew, this was a conversation I did not expect to happen this way, but also I think it's such a beautiful way to kick off Black History Month for us, because talk about the other femmes and the other, like the other mothers and the femmes that have kept us safe and guided us in life. And this was really special, so I'm thankful that we did this. It is time for another break, so y'all can grab us.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
Snack, and John and I will be right back.
All right, y'all. So welcome back. And we are going to jump into what's popping this week. I know it's been a minute since we've given you all kind of a pop culture like refresh. And per a listener's request, I wanted to take a moment to do our annual check-in on the show. Y'all know I love to hate Drag Race.
Yes, love to hate and hate that I love.
Yeah, I hate that I love it, but I love to hate it. We are in season 16, and I'm gonna just say this, and then we're gonna run through some other thoughts. I'm gonna say that I feel like all of them look like other queens. Like, it's getting to the point now where it's very hard for me to figure out who's who, because they all look like somebody else. Like, somebody looks like Simone. Somebody looks like Will Pill. Somebody looks like they all look the same. And I don't know if it's because they're painting the same or if they carry the same personalities or what. So if I mess up people's name or if I just don't know the girl's name, so sorry. But a reality of it is that I know Drag Race is going to go on for a very long time because it's Paramount's bread and butter at this point. But I will definitely say, like, I that is one of my biggest critiques about the Drag Race franchise, is that I miss the days where you saw Queen and you went, oh my God, that Queen. It's like, for instance, when you see Raven, there is no other Raven. Like, there is no other Raven. Mayhem, there is no other Mayhem. It's just a lot of them feel the same to me at this point. Anyway, to get off of that soapbox, I do have some thoughts about this season, but I wanted to give our listeners something to cackle about in regards to my thoughts of the season so we can just talk about it and move on. So with that being said, my question that I have for you is, what girl, before I give mine, what girl is on your watch list for this season? Who is the girl to watch for you?
My watch list queens right now are Nymphia Wind. I love her. I love her. I'm kind of here for Morphine. I don't know what she can do, but the mug is unclockable to me. Like, I don't know what she can do yet, but the mug is right. Okay. And I think I said, I said last week, and other said to an episode that we did or to somebody else, but I appreciate the sisterhood that she'd be given to other queens.
It was us.
I definitely watching Q. Oh, yeah. Okay. I definitely watching Q. I think Q. It was funny because Q, as the brick last week, the judges were living. And I was like, this is fine. Like, I think it was the best of the what the others gave. But I was like, this is obviously not geared for black audience.
So wait, pause. Who was the Barbra Streisand?
Plasma. Plasma was good.
She was Plasma good. Was good. I struggle with her because she's so forgettable. She's very forgettable.
Yes. Yeah, well, so she's forgettable in drag, but she's not forgettable in her comebacks, because I definitely appreciate when she shaded Plain Jane and Untucked the week before last as well. So I'm definitely watching Q, because I think Q is a fantastic seamstress. Mm-hmm. Like, the shape, the designs, to me, some of the best I've seen. Nymphia Wynn's tie look is one of my top three drag looks I've ever seen. There's no way anyone has ever done that before. That was amazing. Sophia Kristal, of course. As much as I hate to say it, Plain Jane is on the watch list. I can't tell if it's on the watch list for a good reason or a bad reason. I think objectively, she is good. Objectively, she's a good queen. And she knows what to do. And she knows what Rue wants from her. And so I'm like, yippee-ki-yay for that one. But I don't love her. But yeah, so that's on my watch list.
I love the plain Jane watch list. Ba-dum-bum, because Plain Jane, she spells her name like plain, and so the idea of her being on the watch list. Yeah. I will say that I like, and I know I saw your note in the show flow, so I'm annoyed. But Geneva Carr is one of the girls I'm like, please, girl, pull it together enough to stay. I do feel like she could be one of those top three girls. Because, you know, in the top three, they always give you that. And I hate saying it this way, but it's the truth. Rue is notorious for giving you a throwaway in the top three. There's always the top two and that one girl.
You admit that she was a throwaway then. You admit that she'd be the throwaway.
She could be the third throwaway. But I also see your point about her not going that far in the competition. I get it. But I'm saying that I do like her personality. I'm right there with you with Nymphia Wynn. I will say this. Do I believe that she's going to get to the top three and be crowned? No. But if, is it Nymphia? Nymphia Wynn. If she was to get to the number two spot and was crowned, I wouldn't be upset. I believe that just based off of her glamour from even the first day of her stepping into the room, I feel like she could make a really good first Pacific Islander queen, the first Asian queen to win. Because I do know that, you know, they coin Mama from last season as like the first API queen to win, but I'm saying like a first true Asian queen. I would be okay with her taking that crown home. Now, I did want to say, like, who are your top three? My top three, and I put this, I said, my top three is, and you said that this is, her name is not Brooklyn. What the fuck is that girl's name?
Dawn.
Her name is Dawn?
Dawn.
Like, it's Brooklyn. Dawn.
When you said Brooklyn, I was like, who the fuck is Brooklyn?
Or maybe she's from Brooklyn?
I think she's a New York queen, but her name is Dawn.
Okay, well, either way, you know who the fuck I'm talking about.
I know who you're talking about. Yeah, Dawn, I bet what you put
down. I call her the, like, so she's like the Target version. What is the market? She's the market pantry Willow Pill to me. She's like, she is. Like, and that's not a dig. It really is the idea of, like, Willow Pill is a very, like, she won. So, like, the market pantry version, meaning, like, you're not gonna get Willow Pill out of her, because that's not who Willow Pill is, but she's definitely her makeup and her personality very much reads me as Willow Pill. Sapphire Kristal, I want her to win. Do I think she's gonna win? No, because we've already had two black queens win in like the last three cycles. So I mean, we're not gonna get another black queen to win. But I do want her to go far. Is it Tsunami Muse?
So it's spelled Tsunami Muse. Sometimes they say Tsunami Muse, but anyway, I would say Zuzu.
I don't care what nobody says. Okay. I know she wasn't doing too well on the first, was it the first or the second episode? People were trying to, but that last look she turned, That girl was bad. That's a bad girl.
What about was she wearing
on the runway? Oh my God, I'll have to Google it. I just remember being like, okay, girl.
I'm trying to think, would she wear that? Because see, I think so. I can see her for an underdog for sure. I think she is.
She had on the egg. Remember, she came out as the egg, and then she tore it off.
In the last episode, though?
Yeah, I think the last episode she came out as the egg.
Yes. Yeah. So I think she's doing better than her mother, uh-huh. for sure. And I think she comes off better than her mother. But I see, to me, she'd be my throwaway. I think she'd be my throwaway for the top three. Like I like her a lot. And in her name, I loved two weeks ago, where her and Geneva talked about being DACA recipients, because that's something that has not been discussed on the show before. I think we discussed folks who are immigrants, discussed folks who may have been undocumented, but not DACA recipients. I think that was really, really powerful. And I love that Tsunami Moves is Afro-Latino, because I feel like that's not something that is celebrated or seen a lot on Drag Race. Folks who are like so boldly Afro-Latino. I mean, like, yes, like Candy Means as well, mm-hmm. being Jamaican too. But I just really appreciate someone coming in with that. My top three. So I think, if at present, Nifia Wind is in top three for sure. I agree that I don't know if I'd see her winning. I don't know if I say winning simply because I'm like xenophobia from mother.
Yeah.
I can see Nifty Wind, I can see Q, and I can see Sophia Cristal. I can already see Q winning because I think right now she's presented enough of like, this is what Rue likes. Like, she's not afraid to like look stupid, which is what Rue loves. Mm-hmm. But she's beautiful. She paints really well, and she is an amazing seamstress. Yeah. So I can see her winning. I mean, Safira is like poise and grace. Like, Safira has the whole package. There's something about Rue that I'm like, I don't think she would give Safira the win. So I think those are my top three. I can see Plain Jane being in there as well too. To me, she's a Jimbo knockoff to me.
Yeah, with the big titties. Yeah, very much that.
Yes, she's a bit of a different drag than Jimbo. And I think Jimbo goes, I think the very few queens who go as far as Jimbo has gone in terms of like the lengths in which they'll go to like for the sake of drag. Plain Jane hasn't gone there yet. I don't think she will, but I can see her being in top four, if not top three, but I do hope someone picks her out, honestly. I'm trying to think of anybody else. Who is the other queen that, I forgot. But that said though, I wonder if they'll do, because they haven't done this in a while, and this is the season of twists. I wonder if they will do like a twist where the queens come back. And they fight to get back.
No, they haven't done that in a while. Yeah.
And I wonder, because I wonder who could come back from that.
I think one that they just sent home, who basically
I was thinking Mirage.
Yeah.
And I love Mirage, but I don't know if I think that she has like the whole, I don't know if she has a whole shebang there.
Right. Her. But my thing is that. Back. And I'm going to jump in and say, that's how I feel about a mandatory meeting. Like, I love her personality, but I feel like she's the Shangela of the season. Like, you just need a little bit more time to get your, to polish up your look.
When she was like, clock the mug, I was like, yes, you look presentable today. Like, but like that,
not
that, like,
presentable.
That was, I mean, truly, like, and I want to be clear. I also, her personality, everything, her love wit, her. Sharp. Love her. Yes. I love that she's not taking any shit from Plain Jane, period. Like, I love that for her. And I'm like,
but girl, like, yeah, but also, like, I feel like two things can be true. I think she's an amazing drag queen in terms of personality, performance, the presentation, the and again, I also want to be very clear that I want to say, like, I always have to say this when we're talking about drag, because I think people think that when Black girls get on the mic or whenever they get in front of the camera and they start talking about drag, it's like, how the fuck can you make, how can you say that about these girls when you don't do drag, right? It's kind of the same way when people get on and start talking about podcasters, right? I'm like, you don't know podcasting and you don't know how much work goes into it. So who are you to make that? But what I will say is, being someone who has been a avid RuPaul watcher show, I've written about it, I feel like that's where I can make the critique, to say that knowing what RuPaul is looking for, I can look at a mandatory meeting and say, girl, I don't think you're as polished as, but on the other end too, and again, maybe one day we'll have this conversation and maybe we'll want to pull in a drag queen to have this convo. You know, John, my partner, has said this, and I fully agree with it. You know, I guess when the Hershey baby left, she was on that talk show with Michelle Visage, and she was talking about how she sold her car and took out a loan and took all this money out and borrowed a whole bunch of money from people to be able to come on to do Drag Race. And I think there needs to be a greater conversation of the lengths that a lot of these queens are going to get their money, like to get their money up or to get the things that they need in order to be successful on this show. And how sometimes, and like for instance Hershey's case, right, she took all this money out and is in this debt and now was voted out like the first episode or second episode, third episode, I think it was the third episode, because we're now on episode I think 5, so it was 4 or 5. So I think it's just, there's a lot there. But I will say, going back to it, same thing with, was it Maya Amon LePage? Like, she's cute, but I think that she's Drag Race ready? I don't know. Like, I don't want to be mean, because it's not that I want to shit on other Black girls, because I want them all to win. I just feel like there's a certain caliber you have to be at in order to compete on these shows, and girls like Amanda Torrey and Maya LePage are not ready. That's just my thought.
Yeah. Ooh. So, okay. So several thoughts here, because where to start? So I think one, what was the thing you said before, like right before you went to my Imam page, you were talking about
the money,
the money. So I think a lot about Chichi Devane, of Blessed Memory, right?
Oh, like, my God, my love. Yeah.
Right. I mean, like, loved her so much. And probably one of the last times you saw folks use like cosmetic store makeup to do things, right? Because a point was made in that season,
right,
about using or not using cosmetic store makeup. And when she came back for All Stars, right, she wasn't using it anymore. And so right. I think to your point, like, it's so true. So many queens go broke to be on this show. Mm-hmm. This show, like, is responsible both for platforming queens and like evicting them from their homes. You know what I'm saying? Like, this show really is doing both. If someone wants to say, how can you talk about Drag Race? Bitch, I was a drag queen actually for a few years, so y'all can kick rocks with that one. Well, and as someone who was a drag queen, I can tell you, I would not thrive on this show. Like, I would not.
And that's what I was gonna say. Like if I ever got to do drag, I would never. Like, it would take me years to even think wanting to.
I'm not a seamstress, and I won't be the bitch who goes on the show saying I'm not a seamstress. Like, I know I have to be a seamstress to be on the show.
Yep.
I know I'm funny as hell, but I can't pay the way these queens paint. Like, someone that I think about a lot, who it's, I feel sad to say this, because I know that you had put earlier in the notes, like, who do you want to go home, right? And I think Megami is someone who I'm fine with going home, which makes me sad, because I want to like her so much. And I'm sure someone's going to say I'm fatphobic for not.
Joho, you're fatphobic. You're fatphobic, Joho.
But it is simply because she does not have the range. Like, I would not have the range either on the show. There are plenty of fat girls on the show who have the range. I love artistic drag, 10 out of 10. But, like, being a consumer of this capitalist show, I know it is hard for artistic drag to thrive on this show.
Yeah.
Sasha Velour is one of the only queens that was able to thrive on artistic drag. It was, and I think, one, because she was a fantastic queen. I think also because, like, she can balance art with glamour, the way that RuPaul wants glamour. And I think, like, I think it, like, these critiques have nothing to do with whether or not they're great drag queens. Like, I believe some of them are great drag queens.
They are.
And I believe that they all believe that, they believe that they're all great drag queens as well, but it doesn't always translate to the show itself. And it really is not real. Like truly no tea on that. Because again, I would never be on the show because I would fail. People right. would eat me up and I would not blame them for it. Like, don't have me on the show. And so, but I think to your point, as people who work in entertainment in this way, you know, like we understand the mechanics behind what this show needs. I hope people also who watch the show don't watch the show as the only, like, as the only gatekeeper to what good drag is. Like, there is so much fans drag outside of this show. And it's not even that this is the best of the best. It is like, this is the best of the certain framework of drag that exists on television.
Yeah.
That is different. So that's why, like, a queen like Megami, who I think if I saw her live, I would probably fucking live.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I would live so many things that
yeah.
I see in your face.
I was going to say, you have a point, because I was going to say that's, you know, and I've talked to Mayhem about this outside of this. And so I don't want this to be a slight, because y'all all know that that's my girl. She lives in my heart daily. But I think there's this idea of what translates well for Drag Race as a frame versus what translate for, like, as good drag outside of the MTV Paramount bubble. And that's why when I look at Mayhem, you know, I love that she's going back on the show, right? She's getting ready to go back on another version or another iteration of the show. But I will say, like, I look at Mayhem and I go, Mayhem, yeah, she is.
But can you say that publicly?
Yeah, it's public. She said that she's going on. Okay. Yeah, I saw it on Facebook.
Okay.
So
okay, I was like,
pretty sure it's public. Okay. But I don't know what iteration it is, because I didn't pay too much attention to it, but I did see her announce it. And I will say, like, I love that she's continuing to thrive and get her coins from said network, right? But when I look at what Mayhem does outside of Drag Race, I think she's one of the best and one of the smartest and one of the most genius queens to ever. But it's the same thing too can be said about Jasmine Masters, right? Jasmine Masters did not translate well on the television show, but if you go see Jasmine Masters in San Diego, my God, she owns the building. Like, Jasmine Masters walks in and you get chills because you know that she's going to turn it. And so that's the thing. Like, I don't think, and that's the thing I always get mad at, because I think people think, well, just because they didn't do good on Drag Race means that they're a terrible queen. No, what I'm saying is that Drag Race is super commercial, and it's very much that Rue is looking for a specific type of drag queen who can do the press and who can be in front of the camera and who can, like, for instance, like, I've known people to say this about T.S. Madison. T.S. Madison, when she turns on a camera, she lights up the room, right? But when you sit with her, some people would say, oh, T.S. Madison is boring because, you know, when she's at home. So there, again, there's certain people who can hold certain spaces at certain in different times. And a lot of the girls on the show, once that camera comes on, their light goes off because they're so in their head. They're so caught up in that word. Here goes that word again, the minutia of a television show, right? That they don't know how to. And then there's the flip. There are people who, soon as the light comes on, they turn on and they're great and they're fantastic. And then you meet them outside of the show and you're like, that bitch is boring. Like, even what's the other girl?
The show is a performance within a performance. Who? Like, you have to perform.
It is a performance.
The show is a performance within a performance.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You have to perform as a queen and perform as a person on TV.
Yeah. You are a character of yourself. Yeah. You are a character of yourself on this show. And I think that's why so many of the girls do so poorly when they do this show, and why they have such bad reputations, is because they don't go on the show thinking to themselves, oh, shit, I'm going to be edited to be a character of myself. And that is the thing that a lot of the girls miss. And that's one of the things I wish that they did trainings on, of like, if you're going to do reality TV, you have to be aware that you are going to be edited to be a character of your character. And how that character reads, especially if you're a Black fat girl on one of these shows, baby.
Okay.
Who knows? You know?
Okay.
So, all right, y'all. Well, I am glad we had this conversation. Will we revisit it later? Maybe. I don't know. But I will say that I am rooting for anybody Black on the show. And I hope that folks, whoever, if they've been on the show or if they've been eliminated, I hope they do well. All right, y'all. Well, we are going to take another break. And when we get back, we're going to dive into y'all.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
House favorite segment, our Yes Ma'am and No Ma'am Pam. More in a second. Okay, so this week, I'm going to go ahead and let you start, because I always start. So what are your yes ma'ams and your no ma'ams for this week, baby?
So my yes ma'am is Issa Rae's Time Cover. Amen. Like, as a queen of rooting for everybody black, I'm rooting for my queen Issa Rae. And I really love that she talked about like the pay equity gap, and really was like, I love that she named in her interview how the idea of making money to change people's lives,
yeah,
and knowing that it is a gross game to do, to have to be capitalistic to then create impact, but also knowing how much capital creates impact, and for her to acknowledge that while also being like, but if I'm gonna do it, then I'm gonna do it in a way that roots everybody else around me, and that's been I just love. So really pray, blessed be to her, my queen Saray.
Yeah.
My no man Pam, I mean, really, right now, I just think nothing specific. It is just seeing folks use black voices for things that they have no business using black voices for. Like, girl, you actually don't need to use, insert activist figures voice here for something, or words here for something that you actually care nothing about. I just am so tired of people, and I'm tired of the organizations and people that are like this. Like, but this is Black History Month. We celebrate all Black people for all their contributions to our society. And I'm like,
but girl,
do you also contributions? It sounds so passive. Like, you mean the fact that we built this society on our backs? Mm-hmm. Is that the contribution, or is that actually like ownership? Like, let's talk about them right here. So, just the folks and organizations that are saying things like that, because I just sit back and I'm like, you really hate black people all the time.
Yeah.
And also, you ain't said shit all year about black people. It's just, it is, and yet people fall for it. People are like, this is so great. And I'm like,
but is it though?
Period. Why would you even?
Like, yeah.
But is it? But is it though?
And I will say, I, yes to Issa's cover. I will say it's hard reading Issa's. It was hard me reading that article, because my mind goes, if Issa Rae feels this way and she's in the industry, what hope do I have as someone who's trying to quote unquote break in? So that's been the hardest thing for me to kind of take while reading it. But also, I'm happy that Issa's saying what needs to be said about the industry, because there are a lot of black folks who are like, oh, I'm so scared that if I mention how terrible the industry is, that, my work and my opportunities are going to dry up. And it's like, baby, you do recognize that by not speaking up, you're complicit with what's happening and nothing's going to ever change. So I say all of that to say, like, I appreciate her doing that. The other part of me, and I guess I can start with my no ma'am, Pam, and then jump into my yes, ma'am. It's really to your point. I had noted that I'm also very tired of the performative assnessness of everything, from the Justin Timberlakes to the companies that are like, oh, you know, we love and we support Black people. But yet when you look at, you know, I think this is coming from, and again, so I was going to say this to your point. I'm so happy that in the next couple of weeks, Bridget Todd is going to be on. And one of the things that I had noted in our show notes that I wanted to talk to Bridget about is what I like to call digital blackface, and knowing that a lot of TikTokers have made a lot of money. Oof. They have made a lot of opportunities using Black women's voices and using Black trans women's, you know, things to their sound bites and things to make their stuff go viral, and how a lot of Black TikTokers, specifically Black women and Black trans women TikTokers, get hate and retribution for a lot of the stuff that they post, especially when they're posting about injustice. But yeah, I can't wait to talk to Bridget Todd about that. But all of that to be said, I think my biggest qualm that I've been having and that I continue to have is seeing in the last 2 to 3 weeks, we're seeing journalists, specifically Black, you know, and again, I'm naming it because we see it in the news, right? LA Times, they've just gutted their diversity initiative. They've gutted their Black, a lot of Black and brown, you know, journalists were given the boot recently. And then you have the audacity to say that you support the work that MLK and that Malcolm X is doing. And I'm going, but yet you just fired all these Black and brown people from your company, but you're posting on February 1st that you appreciate Black history. So what about the Black history that you just let go of, right? Like there were a lot of journalists. Go ahead.
So can I ask you as well, just to LA Times, because it's not because I love LA Times in many ways, but they gutted Delos, like that whole vertical. Mm-hmm. And then I just saw on LinkedIn posted that they're hiring for Delos. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
You,
but a lot of companies are doing it. A lot of companies are doing it. So that way they, and I think it's so that way they don't get hit with, oh gosh, there's something, someone was explaining it on Twitter and I forget the tweet, and I wish I knew enough to be able to go find it. But someone was explaining that a lot of these companies, when they fire quote unquote Black and brown and Asian or whatever, and then they repost the jobs for specific verticals or for specific things, they don't get in trouble, I think, with like the employment, not employment development, but there's another company that I guess that looks at the ways mm-hmm. that companies, because again, in California specifically, there's all of these boxes that these companies have to check. And so they repost the job, then in it looks like, right, in the grander scheme of things, it looks like they're still trying to be in line with the equity, right? It's all performance. Yeah. But at the end of the day, they don't necessarily have to fill the job because the job is quote unquote not, it's not filled. So there's a, you know, I will just say this and then I'll hit you with my yes, ma'am, and then we can move on. I think the biggest thing for me that's been really frustrating in all of this is just really seeing how comfortable and how, like I said, complicit people have become with seeing Black and brown, not only just creators, but people suffer. There's just a lot of complicity now more than ever around us saying, yo, I'm struggling. I have no air. Can somebody get me just, you know, I don't know if you ever played Sonic, right? But when Sonic was underwater and he was going for a ring and he would have to go to the top to get an air bubble, right? Like that's how it feels. It feels like so many of us are just so tired of swimming and we constantly keep coming up and saying, give us an air bubble, give us an air bubble. And everyone's like, you know, drown, bitch. Like that's basically what it feels like. It really feels that way. And so it's been really hard to take in. And so I'm also right there with you with the performative assnessness of everything. In terms of my yes, ma'am, I'm going to say this is going to be very quick. My yes, ma'am is seeing that man that we do not name, 45, having to pay Sister Girl $83.3 million. Now, whether this man has it or not is a good question, but let me tell you something. I just want a dollar of it. I just on principle, like I love seeing this man get his comeuppance. And my prayer, you know, there are a lot of things I want. I want the new Apple Pro Vision glasses. I want, you know, I want my hair to stop acting up. If you haven't noticed, some of my hair is not lining up and doing what the other curls are doing, right? There's a lot of things I want, but there's nothing more that I want than this man to go to jail and to die in a cell. And I know, I hope we don't get in trouble for saying this, but it is the God honest truth that I feel like this man deserves every single bad thing that is coming his way. And I pray that he gets it in this lifetime for me to be able to see. Like, I pray I'm alive to see him get every single thing that comes to him. So yeah, that's that on that. With that being said, we're gonna go ahead and wrap things up around here. Please send us your thoughts, your feedback, and your emails to blackfatfempod@gmail.com. You can also send us your thoughts via social media by interacting with us on our post on the Instas and the Twitters, and by using the handle @blackfatfempod. Shout out to the people who are giving us rating us 5 stars. Tell a friend. Please keep following us and supporting us, because without your support, there's only so far we could go. Queen Joho, where can the dolls find you?
As always, my loves, you can find me at Joho Daniels across all socials, and also at my website, jordandaniels.com. And if not there, you will find me arguing with whoever controls the weather, asking why climate change is happening, why it's pouring in these streets, and why we're flooding. And also fighting the cities of metropolitan cities and the governments who don't give infrastructure to lower-income areas to actually handle the rain, because people's homes are getting destroyed, cars being submerged, people are legit drowning in these streets. We need to do better. So if we find the good fight, and also at my website. Thank you.
I will say this. A friend of mine who lives in LA, I was supposed to go to LA for something yesterday, and I was texting them about going, and they were saying, I was like, hey, did you make it to the event? And they basically were like, no, where I live, it's flooded and I can't get through it. He was like, if you haven't left yet, I would just stay home, because I guess there's the where we were supposed to go yesterday for a Grammy event, there's a freeway pass that you're supposed to get on, and that freeway pass was flooded. So he was just like, girl, he was like, I've been sitting here for 30 minutes and I don't know when I'm gonna make it. If you're not coming, stay home. Yeah. And that's what made me stay home. Plus, I'm a little under the weather, if y'all can't hear. But all that to be said, y'all can find me these next couple of days laying up on my couch finishing Love on a Spectrum. I just want to say very quickly that I have never, I'm not a person who watches reality shows and cries. But baby, the way that last episode of season 2 of Love on the Spectrum had my face wet. Connor, Journey, that I want to protect them with all of my heart. Like, I have never loved people on a show as much as I love both of them. And I know that some people will probably say, oh, it's problematic that you feel the way that you feel because they're both people with special needs. I just think that they are beautiful souls that just, oh, they're just so beautiful to me. And it's such a beautiful show to watch because I have such a special place in my heart for people with special needs. And it makes me so happy to see the world helping them to get the love that they deserve. So it is just such a good show. It is really one of the only shows on Netflix that I feel like is done well in terms of reality. It doesn't feel like we're watching grossness happen, where we're like, what's the word that people use the reality TV shows like Love After Lockup and all of those shows, there's a word that people use for them and I can't figure out what the word is, but yeah, where you're basically using people's terrible situation to make money. Exploitation. It doesn't feel exploitative. It feels very much like we're on a journey with people who truly are looking and wanting love. And I say if you have not watched Love on a Spectrum, you should. Also, I will say Down with Love is also a very good show to watch. It's right behind Love on a Spectrum. I think that they're actually probably produced by the same production company, but another show of like, if you haven't watched it, please watch it. It's so good. But yeah, other than that, you can find me online, Dr. John Paul. Also visit my website, www.drjohnpaul.com. I want to thank, or I would say we want to thank, our supervising producer, Rebecca Ramos and Bay Wang, for handling all the logistics in our super executive super producer Anna Hosnia and everyone over at iHeart for keeping the show up and going. We also want to shout out our wonderful editor, mix master, you name it. Just the person who makes sure that we look good and sound good every single week, Chris Rogers, because without them, we would have no show. This has been another one. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And remember, it's not your booty, it's your beauty. I love us for real. Bye. Bye.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.